Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians open up their series against the Detroit Tigers with a 2-1 win. Jose Ramirez providing the go-ahead home run, as he's done, 87 some times in his career, the most in Guardians history. Home run off the foul pole in the sixth inning in a pretty tight game. Another example of when the Guardians need him the most, Jose Ramirez comes through.
Yeah, just a big hit off of, Jack Flaherty, who was really pitching well for Detroit. You know, even, outside of last night, he came into the game with 50 strikeouts, Joe. So this kind of has kind of rediscovered himself from St. Louis and really gave Detroit a good start. And, Jose derailed him with the home run off the foul pole in the sixth inning. And, Sunday he puts the Guardians back in front with another two-run homer in the sixth inning against the Angels in a 4-1 win.
Yeah, so, prior to that, he had been in an 0-for-19 slump, and we talked yesterday about how, he sort of let some of that emotion out when he, hit the home run on Sunday. So are we saying he's shaking off this slump, or is it just too you don't want to say he's in anything that's we've seen Jose Ramirez in a prolonged slump, and we know what that looks like. This just feels like, maybe he was scratching for something for, maybe a week or so, but now he seems to like he's getting back locked in.
Yeah, Joe, I don't know. He's hit a lot of balls hard since the start of the season, and they haven't fallen in. He's only hitting .230. And that's not the Jose Ramirez, that we've seen. So I think he's still kind of, trying to get some traction, but the last couple games have been really good signs for him.
Yeah, Stephen Vogt in his postgame talked about how he's hitting the ball hard. His contact is good. It's good hard contact that are extra base hits if they're not finding the gloves of these defenders. But, if a couple more of these balls are dropping in, we're not talking about him being in some sort of like prolonged slump or anything like that. So they're looking at the quality of his at bats and they're saying that's good. It's just, really the only guy who gets Jose Ramirez out is Jose Ramirez. When he expands the strike zone, when he swings and chases and does that kind of stuff, he's the one who gets him out. It's not always pitchers getting him out. And he's got to remember that, I think. And, we saw him draw a walk. We saw him hit the home run, all good signs. So, and he loves hitting against Detroit. So he's got two more games to do that.
Yeah. 29 career home runs against the Tigers. And you're right, Joe. I mean, this is a guy that always walks about as much as he strikes out. And right now he struck out 17 times and walked only 9 times. So that tells you he's been, kind of swinging wildly. It looks like he gets a lot of breaking balls thrown his way. I think he gets frustrated with that. And that's when he starts to chase.
Yeah. And once he figures out that, okay, everybody's throwing me breaking balls down and away, if I lay off of them enough, if I take enough walks, I'll start seeing some fastballs maybe again, and then I can do a little more damage. So it goes in cycles. Pitchers go in cycles too, so not a big deal. Speaking of going in cycles, Tristan McKenzie last night, another strong outing coming on the heels of a good start in Houston, his best start of the year in Houston. So Tristan McKenzie looking like he's getting that confidence back and that he's figuring out ways to get batters out and be efficient and maybe get a little deeper in games and give his team a little bit more than what he was doing in the first couple of weeks of the year.
Yeah, five innings last night, one run, three hits, six strikeouts, three walks. And like you said, Joe, comes on the heel of that really good start against Houston. You know, seven innings, two runs, another six strikeouts. It only took him, I think he got a no decision in that, but the Guardians won the game in extra innings. He threw 90 pitches against the Astros and 83 last night, and that's why Vogt pulled the plug on him.
Yeah, and he turns it over to the bullpen, and the bullpen did the job once again. Tim Herron, Nick Sandlin, Hunter Gaddis, all come in and have strong outings. Just what do you think of the job that those guys in particular, but I'm really looking at Nick Sandlin and the job he's done consistently all year. When they've needed somebody to come in and get weak contact, when they've needed a big strikeout even at certain points, Stephen Vogt refers to Nick Sandlin as his comfort blanket, his rescue animal there. It's an interesting sort of feeling right now for a guy, Sandlin, who hadn't really shown that kind of consistency prior to this season, but this year things seem to have come together.
Yeah, he calls him what, his pacifier?
Pacifier, that's it.
Yeah, so yeah, that's a new one for me, Joe. So yeah, I mean, Sandlin, you know, has the ability to go more than one inning. He's got that slider that's really kind of death to right-handers. He's 3-0, Joe, 3-0 with a 2.04 ERA, 19 games. He's got 20 strikeouts in 17 and two-third innings, only four walks. The opposition is hitting 136 against this guy. So, you know, he's locked in right now. And the only thing that really has ever held Nick Sandlin back are injuries. You know, we've seen him really, really good. We've seen him do this before, but he could never finish the year. Just, you know, there was always an arm injury. He's got kind of that high-stress delivery that puts a lot of stress on his shoulder and his arm. But, you know, he's held together so far this season, and he's looked great.
Just the Statcast metrics on Sandlin. He's among the league leaders in just not allowing hard hit, hard contact, percentage. His strikeout rate, his whiff percentage, the swing and miss is 98th percentile. Expected batting average, 95th percentile. Expected ERA, 89th percentile. I mean, he is absolutely killing it. This is a good time for Nick Sandlin to go sit down at the negotiation table and say, hey, what do you got for me? Because he's definitely getting the job done. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Hunter Gaddis last night in that game. Gets out there and they give him the eighth inning with a one run lead. And that's that showed me something from Stephen Vogt. He said, you know, he's got to put him back out there because it's sink or swim. They need him to pitch those innings. And he went out there, gave up, I believe, a one out double that was about 6 inches away from being a home run that could have tied the game. Came back and got the big strikeout to end the eighth inning. Showed a little bit of emotion out there on the mound. Just a big outing for Hunter Gaddis after, you know, three consecutive games on that road trip where he lost or wasn't able to hold on to a lead.
Yeah, you know, in the eighth inning on those three straight games against Atlanta and Houston, he blew the save in the eighth inning. You know, he had one appearance since then leading into the last night. And he pitched around trouble last night. Joe, like you said, Cary Carpenter hits the double off the wall. Then there's an infield hit by Spencer Torkelson. You know, Carpenter doesn't advance to third. Probably cost the Tigers a run there. And then there's a fielder's choice that Ramirez, gets an out at second base. Probably should have been a double play.
Double play.
I don't know what Carpenter was doing. I mean, he ran. He almost ran to the pitcher's mound.
He was running out of the baseline is what he was doing to avoid being tagged, and it somehow worked because the officials didn't rule that he was out of the baseline. But go on.
The third baseman was sitting there watching the whole play. The third base umpire, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. You go back to Carpenter's double off the wall. It occurred to me that if Bob Feller wore number 18, that game would have been tied because, that 19-foot wall out there in left field it is 19 feet high in honor of Bob Feller. Had he worn number 18, that ball would have been in the first row of seats. So you got to wonder about that. But Jose Ramirez didn't understand how Carpenter was not called out for running out of the baseline on that play. But give Gattis credit. He got the strikeout. He got out of the inning. He did what he needed to do. Was it Javi Baez that he struck out?
Parker Meadows.
So I think Meadows was batting 167 at the time. So, not a huge surprise there. But again, to get out of that situation, it was a big plus, a big moment for Gattis because this is all about confidence. Speaking of confidence, Will Brennan looking pretty confident and strong at the plate as well lately.
Yeah, Will Brennan is swinging a nice bat. He's hitting .368 in May. He drove in Cleveland's first run last night. After McKenzie gives up a first pitch homer to start the game to Riley Green, the Guardians come right back in the bottom of the first with an RBI single by Brennan. So he's swinging the bat well. He's kind of under the radar right now, Joe.
Yeah, but what we've seen over the last couple of weeks here is that his hard hit contact rate is up as well, even on like fly balls to that he's getting out to left field, he's still hitting the ball hard and in the gap and driving the ball. Once he's doing that as a left-handed batter, hitting it to left field that way, we've seen that. So good signs from Will Brennan, and he's starting to certainly come around, and anything he can do to lengthen that middle of the lineup is certainly helpful. But there's a new face in the middle of that lineup as the much awaited, long awaited debut of the number two prospect in the organization, Kyle Manzardo, took place on Monday. We were pretty sure that he was going to be the guy added when there was some injury moves on the roster. What did you think of your first impressions of Kyle Manzardo at the plate on Monday?
Well, he went down swinging three times, Joe, so he didn't get cheated. Kind of a tough debut, but not unexpected. I think first the nerves are. I'm sure he was nervous. His parents, caught a flight from Idaho. They had to make like four different stops to get here for the game. A lot of pressure on a lot of probably self-induced pressure, a lot of nerves, I would think. And, I think we'll see a better, a much better result here in the days to come, as Kyle kind of settles into the big leagues.
Yeah, I remember Nolan Jones coming up in the 2022 season, and it was in Kansas City, and it was sort of it wasn't a home game. There wasn't that sort of feeling of immense pressure or anything like that. Nolan Jones went out there, got two base knocks, had a great day. The next day he came up and he homered into the fountains in Kansas City. I sort of look at Manzardo differently. I think he's in a lineup now where the whole thing was, look at what he's doing down at AAA right now. He's so hot. He should just come up here and keep running in stride and keep, clubbing home runs and taking walks. And he got the full big league experience. Stephen Vogt said after the game, he's like, welcome to the big leagues. That's what it's like. It's better to get that out of the way. And your team still won. Hey, he contributed to a winning side there. The big news, I think, that came out of Monday after we talked to Manzardo, after we talked to Vogt, was where they are going to try to work Vogt in and around, as he's going to continue to DH now. But he's also going to take, plenty of work at first base and a new position as well.
Yeah, Stephen Vogt said they're going to, work Manzardo in the outfield, try, give him some reps out there. Joe, how many outfielders do you have on one roster? It seems like everybody on this on this roster is playing, can play the outfield. So what's the problem with one more? But I think it'll help Manzardo even if he doesn't play. I don't think he's going to play a lot. You know, I don't think this is the time you try somebody, you try to convert somebody to that outfield, you know, in the big leagues. I think you do that at spring training and in the minors if you're serious about it. But there's no harm in it, you know, just kind of expand his versatility. Maybe in an emergency, he ends up out in one of the corner outfields.
Yeah, that word versatility is what Stephen Vogt used when he first told us about this. And I get the versatility. I understand that. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, from all accounts, can barely play first base or can't play it yet at a big league level. And you're now trying to put more on his plate in terms of not only being prepared for that day's starting pitcher as a hitter, but, he's going to get his work in ahead of games. He can DH as much as he wants and still work with Kai Correa and Ruglis Odor every day on the field, sort of getting out there and working the position, getting his footwork done, knowing where to take throws when the ball goes into the outfield, that kind of stuff. It's all going to be a huge learning process. I would be absolutely stunned if we see him in the outfield at any point during this stint in the major leagues for Kyle Manzardo. It would be absolutely stunning to me if that happened, but I guess stranger things have happened. So let's just keep that on your radar for moving forward. Kyle Manzardo, who's never played above college in an outfield role, and they're going to throw him out there in a major league game. I mean, the guy can't run. You're not gonna put him out there in the outfield. I just don't see it. So
yeah, but remember one thing, Joe. Who was the starting outfielder in the World Series in 2016 in left field when it shifted to a Wrigley Field?
Yeah, but Jose Ramirez is
Carlos Santana.
Carlos Santana, yeah. Okay.
You're right. Stranger things can happen.
Yeah, but the universal DH was not in play in that series, so I guess things are a little bit different. Sam Henches returns, throws an inning, I believe, or throws two-thirds of an inning last night. What does Sam Henches add to the bullpen now? Now you've got two wipeout lefties in that bullpen, along with Tim Herron. Got to be a plus for Stephen Vogt.
Yeah, it was nice to see Sam back out there. You know, he started the sixth inning. Had the misfortune of a catcher's interference to start the inning. So, runner got on base right away, but he retired the next two guys. With the help of Jose Ramirez, made a great catch at third base. I think he had to catch it in self-defense from Andy Ibanez, the pinch hitter, send like a rocket at him. And then he walked a batter, so he left with two outs and two on. And, Sandlin came in and closed the inning out. But, yeah, it was good to see him out there again. Really, it was his, 2024 debut. So, good outing, a good start for Sam. And hopefully, he stays healthy and can help now. Because, like you said, Joe, two lefties, kind of dominant lefties, hard-throwing lefties, that can only help this bullpen.
Yeah, and now Stephen Vogt, if he wants to go to a lefty earlier, like say the sixth inning or the seventh inning, he can do that and know that, if the whatever stretch of left-handed hitters in a lineup comes back around late in the eighth or whatever, he's got another guy to go back to on the left side. And both of them have similar profiles, so it's good to see. More than one lefty out there in the bullpen. The Guardians have faced so many bullpens that have multiple left-handers in them, and it's given them problems at points. So good to see that there. The big, I guess, news of the day, other than Manzardo's debut, was that the results of Stephen Kwan's hamstring MRI, they come back, they reveal an acute injury, and the course of treatment is going to be about 4 weeks, a month, and Stephen Vogt said that he'd be ready for major league activity. So that means in 4 weeks they should have him back. But you never know with these hamstring injuries, and Kwan has a history. So yeah, I don't think they're going to push with Kwan. It just comes at the worst possible time for Kwan. He was doing everything right, and he was, you know, appointment viewing. He wanted to tune in to see his at bats, just to see what he would do next.
Yeah, just really unfortunate. You know, when he got hurt, he was, you know, was leading the American League in average hits, runs, you know, playing great defense in left field. He was, you know, really kind of ignited that offense from the leadoff spot. And, you know, lo and behold, he pulls a hamstring and, you know, has to go on the IL, Joe. You know, hamstrings always take 4 to 6 weeks. You know, I think if they're saying he's going to be back in big league activity in 4 weeks, I think that's pretty optimistic. Perhaps it's not as bad as first believed. But we'll have to see, Joe. I'm always skeptical. You know, I think when they make these prognoses on injury, I think they're always, you know, lean toward being as optimistic as possible.
Here comes Hoynsey with the fire hose. He's the wet blanket. We think we're trying to read some good news into this prognosis, and here's Hoynsey, Debbie Downer. He's coming and telling us, oh, no, no. So, no, I tend to agree with you. I tend to think that they might go a little slowly. And one reason why I think that is Vogt seems pretty confident in Estevan Florial in that leadoff spot. And Florial, athletic guy, can take walks, can get on base, even if he's striking out a little bit more than you would like and what you're used to with Kwan. Florial might be the guy to sort of fit into that spot.
Yeah, I mean, they see something in Florial that I don't, Joe. I mean, I know he can run. I know he can. He has some power, but we just haven't seen a lot of contact from this guy. But last night he opens the game with the double, scores a run, gets him back to even right away. That's encouraging. And he played left field okay. He hasn't played a whole lot of left field in his career, but he looked okay out there. So, I guess you got to turn him loose and see what he can do. And if he doesn't make it, there's a long line of, candidates behind him.
Yeah, they will have no shortage of guys who can play in that spot in left field moving forward over the next 4 to 6 weeks. So, we'll see how that goes, but I don't believe any of this Hoynsey being down on Estevan Florial. I've seen him go over there in the clubhouse and give him an attaboy as he's sitting on his iPad studying. So I don't believe everything you hear, folks. It's not always that way. Hey, before we get going, want to remind our listeners, subtext is the best way to get all these injury updates, all of these roster moves and really the lineups each day. From Hoynsey and from me, you sign up for $3.99 a month to get text messages sent directly to your phone. You can go back and forth with Paul and me, getting messages and sending us your ideas and answering questions and asking questions. It's a lot of fun. 216-208-4346. Send a text message to that number and get signed up, or go to cleveland.com/subtext for more information. Hoynsey, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We've got another game tonight. Logan Allen going against Kenta Maeda. We'll bring you more as the series wraps up with a day game on Wednesday. So I think the next time we'll talk to you is Thursday in Chicago.
Good deal, Joe.